Prepare to be astonished!
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. I'm so excited about our guest tonight.
And not just because you have to be.
No, I'm honored to have her here tonight because, you know, I mean, one big plug is I always like to have women from our community here to share their stories.
Women in leadership positions.
Correct. Yes.
You're kind of following in Sherry Folk's
shoes. Yeah. I'm following in the shoes of a lot of wonderful women.
Yeah, but I always think when locally in terms of women in leadership roles, I always picture Sherry, who was a force of nature.
She was.
And she formed the women's professional group to support fellow women.
Other women, women supporting women, yes.
And I always respected that.
So yes. So with that said, I do have Rebecca Copeland, the chief executive of Providence Seaside Hospital, who also happens to be my boss, here with us tonight. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Alana. Hey, everyone.
We're gonna be on extra special good behavior.
Good behavior. Oh, I'm always on good behavior. I keep my eye on you, though. Yes.
Well, that's what you're here for.
Exactly.
Because we know who the professional is.
Yes.
So it's the end of July. Holy moly.
I know. We're halfway through the summer.
Summer completely flew by.
The weather's been amazing, right? Mm. And traffic in Seaside is, you know. Is it okay?
I don't know. It's definitely getting up there.
Yeah.
See, I only think about the traffic in terms of getting from Astoria to Seaside or getting through Seaside or
it's getting through Seaside. That's the problem.
But like, just driving around in Seaside, is it a problem?
Well, Wahana's been closed.
Wahana is just opening up at the end of this month. And that's definitely been a bit of a challenge for our caregivers who've been trying to get to the hospital along Wahana. But what's great is 101, the road improvements that they've done have been outstanding. So just kudos to the city.
And they've been working on 101 for at least 85 years?
I know, I was going to say forever.
It feels like the national media talked about, was it Boston, the pit or the loop or something that they worked on for like 40 years?
Well, we're still waiting on that bypass. How's that bypass?
So we got a big show, so we should get right to it.
Let's do it.
So the brand new third
yes.
time, the
historic
Alana's
words.
New segment.
So this one is Ramfizzled.
Ramfizzled.
Yes.
And I think that's going to, we always guess what the historic word might mean. So
Ramfizzled.
Ramfizzled.
And this is one, here's a hint. Rebecca and I could use this after any day of work.
Oh, see, that changes my guess then. I was going to say, because it sounds kind of like bamboozled, that you're confused.
Kind of rambunctious.
See that? I think you're on the right track.
So maybe connect the two. Bamboozled and rambunctious.
It's exhausted from a hard day of work.
There it is.
Oh, I see. I would not have gone there.
So in this book of the Little Book of Lost Words, I love this example. Millennials aren't lazy. They're ramfizzled.
I like that you
I can say that because I'm not a millennial.
I like that you threw the book under the bus.
Yes.
That it's not you saying that. You're just reading it.
Yes. Exhausted. I'm ramfizzled.
Ramfuzzled.
I would love to know how many millennials even know that word.
I know, right?
Exactly.
Now we know. Historic word of the day.
But that's Alana's mission. She's bringing these words back.
I love these words.
They're so fun. One week at a time, one word at a time.
Yes.
All right. So these are the big history highlights. These are, of course, things that happen tomorrow, July 31st. Icebreakers, conversation starters, possibly winning bar bets.
Yeah, possibly.
Possibly. So I was tempted to make this one my history highlight of the day. 1777, the Marquis de Lafayette becomes a major general without pay in the Continental Army. I think he's a forgotten guy in history, and he's really significant because the Continentals were not really great trained soldiers. They were farmers. They were colonials. And George Washington, we've talked about, is not a fantastic general.
Right.
He's good.
He didn't lose.
But he doesn't exactly say, I've trained you.
Yep. I listen.
But the French Lafayette here, Marquis de Lafayette, is the guy that comes and trains them and makes us into a pretty good fighting force.
Okay.
And this is the part I always forget. I knew he was young. But he's 19 years old.
Oh. Wow.
Isn't that just crazy?
Yes.
So the 19-year-old French aristocrat, Marie-Joseph Paul Roche Yves Gilbert de Motier, also known as the Marquis de Lafayette, and for those that speak French, I apologize, accepts a commission as a major general in the Continental Army without pay. Following his safe arrival in South Carolina, Lafayette traveled to Philadelphia, expecting to be made General George Washington's second in command.
Wow.
You're 19, dude.
Yeah.
Even back then, come on. Although Lafayette's youth made Congress reluctant to promote him over more experienced colonial officers, the young Frenchman's willingness to volunteer services without pay won their respect, and Lafayette was commissioned as a major general. So,
got it. Yeah. Okay.
So he's pretty cool. 1790, the first U.S. patent is granted to Samuel Hopkins for a potash process. I feel like we've talked about that before.
What is that?
Potash.
Potash.
Potash, yeah.
Is that a food?
No, definitely not. Oh my goodness. I'm going to go into like a 30-minute lecture here, and I don't want to do that.
Let's not do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll come back to that one, but that's the first patent.
First U.S. patent ever granted.
Okay. Yeah.
1912, the U.S. government prohibits movies and photos of prize fights.
What year?
1912.
Okay.
And of course,
prize fights.
You know, prize fights back in that period, they really are just beating each other bloody for 90 rounds and just until like somebody collapses. So I get that. 1922. Oh, I wasn't going to give the date. Darn, I was going to quiz you both. 1922, 18-year-old Ralph Samuelson rides the world's first water skis.
Oh, fun.
In Minnesota.
Did he jump the shark?
I don't know.
Years
ever,
later.
Ever water skied?
I haven't. I have, what's the other one? Were you?
The waterboard?
Yes.
See, yep. I've tubed, and that's it.
Yes, I've definitely water skied. I'm not very good. I don't think I could get up anymore, though.
Oh, it just looks so hard. Yeah,
It's keeping it even. Just,
right. Well, it's got to be hard on your body, right? That
It's not that much with the bouncing up and down. It's getting the balance and having the strength to pull yourself up. That's what I found.
Okay.
See, I just would always think it was keeping the skis in the right direction.
Definitely need to do that. Otherwise, you're going to have a bad fall.
Yeah.
If you can imagine.
It does seem like it's fun, though.
Yeah, it does.
Once you see it being done.
Yep.
So, all right. 1972, Thomas Eagleton withdraws as the Democratic vice presidential candidate. How far we've come. Because it gets found out that like 8 years beforehand, he had suffered from depression and he had checked himself into two hospitals three different times.
Got it.
And once or twice, he actually got shock treatment.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
And it became such a scandal that he withdrew.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to bring the ticket down.
How terrible. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. So good. So, we have progress, right?
Yeah. Well, stigma of mental illness even back then.
Yep. You can't be the vice president if you suffered from any kind of depression, apparently.
Yeah.
In 1972.
Admitted to it.
That's true. Well, he didn't admit it, and then they found out, and then he admitted it. He's like, well, yeah, why would I?
Right.
I'm not going to promote it, but why did I didn't hide it. I just didn't talk about it. 1975, labor leader Jimmy Hoffa is reported missing. Where are you, Jimmy? But our history highlight of the day, I think, had the most impact on history. 1809, the first practical U.S. railroad track.
Ooh.
It's wooden, and it's made for horse-drawn cars in Philadelphia.
Interesting.
But trains, even though we kind of take them for granted now.
Right. I still want to bring the train back to Hammond, to Flavelle Town.
Hey.
The town of Flavelle.
I'd be down for that.
I know you would.
Well, we've had the steam engine people.
Yeah. Yeah, someday, that are interested.
Someday
right?
that'll happen.
Be cool.
Although getting it across the river would be a little tough now.
It would be a little tough. That's okay. But
so did I miss anything?
You didn't. And I also didn't do my homework. So that helps too, right? I didn't look up the day. But I'm excited because I want to start talking about Rebecca because she has, she brings a force to Providence Eastside. And in my tenure of almost 9 years at Providence Seaside, I've gone through 5 chief executives. And I like to say, I have really enjoyed all of them, which is a good thing. One was interim, so she just came really, really quickly. But again, they've all been great, and they've all brought different things. But we want to keep Rebecca.
You told me she's the best, though.
I know. Yes, she is. So we are working hard. You know, I it's part of my job description to make sure she stays, so I do what I can. But I want to talk about what got you to this place. So let's go back. And where did you grow up?
My goodness, that's going way back. Sure thing. I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland.
Ooh.
And so I'm an East Coast girl and am surprised to find myself out here on the West Coast, but I couldn't imagine myself to be in any other place. Mm. So grew up in Baltimore. Was an interesting city to grow up in. You know, Baltimore has a bit of a reputation of being a bit of a pretty edgy and a tough city.
Yeah.
But it has a great inner harbor.
It does now, and it didn't back then. So I'm going to date myself a little bit. But when the inner harbor really started to get developed, I was just in my teens. And so I think a lot of people really had sort of just this sense that downtown was a rough place. Hmm. But it was a great place to grow up. Lots of good and dear friends that I still have from there, but started to work my way across the country as I started to do my schooling, and ended up in St. Louis prior to coming out to Oregon for my master's degree. Mm-hmm. And through getting my master's degree in St. Louis, the program that I went through had a really great organization where they connected us with fellowship programs. And so I was connected to Oregon Health Sciences University to do my fellowship out here in Oregon, not thinking that this was going to be my forever place. That was back in 1996. And I've been here ever since.
Now, had you ever visited Oregon before?
I had never visited, but I had some wise people, and it was one person I was working for at the time before I moved out here who said, you know what? You're never going to come back. You know, once you get out there, you're never going to come back.
And what was your impressions, never having visited here before you knew you were coming, when somebody like says, okay, maybe Oregon, what immediately goes into your mind?
Trees. Green, right. Trees, lush, but also really up and coming. So again, this was back in the 1990s,
right.
And it really was a place that I could see was growing and, you know, could be a place to stay.
Because at OHSU, I mean, there was no tram, there was no waterfront. I mean, even it was kind of just an older hospital on the hill at the time.
It was. Actually, the building I was in was a temporary trailer that they were in the process of building the new towers that are there now, and they were beginning that project back when I was there. So my office was in a trailer down in the valley in the pit, and every time I had to go somewhere, I had to go up like three long stairwells, so a lot has changed since then.
And were you going into public health administration at that time?
It was healthcare administration.
Healthcare administration.
A master's in healthcare administration.
And what leads to that decision?
Yeah.
What inspires that?
Yeah. So I grew up with medicine and science all around me. My dad was a doctor and my mom was a scientist. And so growing up, I was in hospitals all on the weekends when I had to tag along because there wasn't a babysitter for me. And so being in a hospital was just the comfortable place. And as I started to think about what my career would be, and I realized that there was a job in healthcare administration, it just was one of the easiest decisions I ever made.
So did you know you didn't want to be a doctor?
I think I knew I didn't want to be a doctor because, you know, honestly, I did. I saw how hard my dad worked. Mm-hmm. He was on call. There were periods in his career. So he's a neonatologist, which meant he was working in the neonatal nursery. Mm. And back in the 80s, there wasn't a lot of backup. And so there were times he was on call all the time. So I didn't feel like he was as present as I knew I wanted to be with my family. So as much as I absolutely admire every single clinician who's out there, that's a really hard job. It's a really hard job.
Yeah.
And how did he feel about you wanting to be an administrator?
Oh my goodness, he loved it. He loves to say that I wanted to be his boss, but that was his joke. But he absolutely loved it.
Fun.
Unfortunately, he didn't live long enough to see me in this role. He passed away actually just months before I moved out here.
But he would be so proud.
He would be.
But you were in healthcare administration.
I was absolutely in healthcare administration, yes. But not as the
executive
over a hospital.
We're going to get to that because position you had right before you came to us. But before we get to that, so OHSU, so you're here in the 90s, and then what? What happens after you finish your fellowship that keeps you here?
Yeah. So, one thing was I met my husband. I met my husband on an airplane, of all places.
Oh, how fun.
I was actually on my way to recruit back at my alma mater at my master's program. And I'm sitting on the plane in a middle seat, of course, and having had talked with people all day long, just wanting to zone out and, you know, not have to talk to anybody. And a group of people board the plane. Obviously, they were together, and it was my husband with a bunch of his colleagues. And they proceed to sort of sit on almost about to both sides of me. And then one of them offered, "Hey, you know, we're together. Would you like the window seat?" And I said, "Please. Yeah. I'm tired. I think I'm going to sleep." That was my out, right? But my husband sat in the middle seat, and we talked. It was a direct flight from St. Louis to Portland.
So you've got 3 hours, 2.5 hours?
4 hours.
4 hours.
Oh, let me tell you, 4 hours. And I think he mostly talked the whole time, but yeah, we both talked the whole time. And what was so neat was then his colleagues were really a part of us getting to know one another. At the beginning.
And his name's Mark.
His name is Mark.
I love that story.
I know, that's a great one.
You got 4 hours to make this happen.
Right. And he did it. Well, he proceeded to lose my phone number, but then he tracked me down. So he knew where I worked at the time. And so apparently he sleuthed around and somebody gave it out.
That's
How much time of a loop of was there? Like, oh, that was a great conversation. The guy never called me.
I think like less than a week.
Okay.
He was pretty much on it.
So not enough time that you were like, I thought it was a connection there. Yeah. He never called me.
Yeah. He made it happen.
There you go. Yeah. So you stayed.
So then I stayed. Yeah. So I probably met him about 2 years after I'd moved out here. And he's an Oregonian. His family's here. His extended family's here. And so this became my new home.
Nice.
So at what point do you transition then to Providence? Because you've been at Providence for 20+ years.
21 years now.
Oh my goodness.
So after OHSU, what really was pretty... really awesome about that role and why I wanted to choose that role coming out of my graduate program was it was a joint fellowship also with Arthur Anderson Business Consulting. And so I did realize, because I was pretty darn young at that point in time, I knew that I still needed to sort of see a bit of the world and explore the Northwest and get more experience in healthcare. And so by moving to a consulting firm, I thought that would be a really smart move for myself. And and this fellowship that then I chose with OHSU was a joint OHSU and consulting fellowship. And so that led me straight to a time consulting, about 5 years consulting after OHSU. And then Providence was one of my clients as I was a consultant. And I realized pretty quickly with Providence as one of my clients back then that it was a wonderful organization and it just felt like home.
It's different, isn't it? I mean, that's how we start our new caregiver program. It's different here because it is, I mean, all of these large healthcare organizations, OHSU, then Providence, you do feel it. It is different. And it's a large Catholic organization as well. So very grounded, very historic organization. You also have a family.
So I have a family, yes. I have two boys, two teenage boys, 17 and 19, and then two adult stepsons who are in their 30s. Okay. So all boys.
Tell me. And they, of course, consider Oregon home, all of them.
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
Okay.
So right before you come to Providence, or to Providence Seaside, you lead one of, I think, the hardest jobs in healthcare during a pandemic. Explain what you did the Valley.
Absolutely. Before the pandemic started, you know, it was a time period where I knew I was ready for my next challenge at Providence. And so when the pandemic hit,
there's a challenge for you.
I got the call that said, "Hey, I heard you're looking for an opportunity." And so I moved into a role which is called within our incident command center as the regional operations chief. And so from the very beginning of the pandemic, I was helping at our regional level. So Providence has 8 hospitals in Oregon. And so I was helping be sort of at that central position, helping with the initiatives that spanned across all of the 8 hospitals. And then through that, I was asked and I was able, I feel like it was an opportunity and a privilege to be able to help stand up our vaccination clinics. And so when the vaccine first hit Oregon in December of that year, and I'm losing track of my years
2020.
Now, 2020, we had to be ready at that moment to be able to start vaccinating thousands and thousands of people. And so that was my big project, to stand up at all of our hospitals.
And is there any training in your background? Is there any emergency playbook? Or are you making this all up?
I think we... A value, you know, through Providence, but I think, you know, just out of necessity, everybody was working together. And so everybody was bringing their best talents to the table. And so it's not one person who, you know, did anything in any of those efforts. It was the experience of the group to really help us figure out what to do.
But this also connected other healthcare systems in Portland. And I think that's where the even bigger challenge is. So it's one thing to tell your staff and your teams what to do. It's another to bring in all of the others who also have a voice and an opinion about how things should be rolled out. And tell us about how that worked.
Yeah, absolutely. So after we had worked on standing up for our own employees, the vaccination clinics at Providence, the mass vaccination site at the Oregon Convention Center was in the process of getting stood up. And so Providence came to the table with Legacy, with OHSU, and with Kaiser, and I was asked to be a part of that. And so then in that role, I was a planning chief, which had a role of working with the components of scheduling and staffing and the vaccine allocation that we had. And that was so very fun, working with people from across 3 other institutions. We'd never met in person, and we instantly became best buddies instantly. It was really energizing. It was motivating, and it was so impressive to see how, you know, organizations that on any other given day would, you know, maybe be, you know, more competing for the market, coming together for the good of the community. Mm-hmm. It was just an awesome experience, and sad at the end when it, you know, when we stood that down.
Yeah. But it was good for us, because at that point, she was ready to move on to another position.
What do you do after that?
And we had one open.
Everything else seems easy after that.
Yeah, about 2 weeks after the Oregon Convention Center then was closing down, we had heard of the news that the executive here in Providence Seaside was retiring. And I was asked if I'd be interested in coming out on an interim basis. Mm. And I said, sure. And then I fell in love with it.
I forgot you were interim first.
I was interim for a good 6 months.
Which was actually a really nice way of doing it, because then she also had the decision to apply. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to make that decision immediately.
And who makes that decision? Who is your boss? Yeah.
Who is my boss?
How do they make that decision? Oh, you'd be good for, let's send you out to Seaside. Who's they?
Gosh. Regional leadership through Providence.
Okay.
But, you know, they also knew, you know, back even predating the pandemic, that it might be the right time for other opportunities. And so, I think that was just, you know, part of the options that were out there. And the timing, you know, certainly worked out. I think so much in life is about just right time.
Which appealed more, because I'm going to assume both appealed, the leadership role or being in Seaside?
I would say absolutely both.
Well, that's what I said. I assume both, but was one greater factor? Like, hey, I would have gone anywhere because I really wanted to sit in the big chair, or I've always wanted to be in Seaside. I love the beach, or I want to get out of Portland.
Gosh. Well, first of all, I want to say it's never about sitting in the big chair. It is really about being able to serve. And I know that probably just seems pretty sort of cheeky, but that's me. And I think those who know me know that that's the case. Mm. So I think it's being able to be in the big chair, but knowing that you can work with a team and really make an impact. And so from that respect, absolutely, that was appealing. Mm-hmm. And Seaside is close. It's so I still do have my family in Portland. My oldest is in college. I'm absolutely making it work. I think really well. It seems mm-hmm. like a great balance, you know, on my side. Mm-hmm. So Seaside was certainly in a location that was close enough to make this work.
And did you know the people at Seaside already, or was it just you kind of knew the names?
I knew some names. Pam Cooper, who I'd worked with about 20 years prior when mm-hmm. I first came to Providence. So there were definitely a few names that I knew, mm-hmm. but the team was ever so gracious and easy to assimilate to.
And we had a fairly new chief nursing officer at the time, too, who'd only been here about a year and a half.
No, only a couple months.
Only a couple months.
Jason
okay.
Plamondon had only been here a couple of months. And so that poor guy said, wait a minute, this chief executive who had just hired me was leaving. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I knew one of the most important things was for Jason to realize, you know, that we have a lot of stability. You've made a great decision. This is a wonderful place for him to see as a long-term home. So we're sort of tracking our tenure together.
Perfect. And he's a lot of fun, too. And we didn't want to lose him either because you're right. Because when you lose a leader, sometimes others go, too, or they use the opportunity. You know, we don't want to go through another change again. Yeah. We don't want to do this. It worked out really well, I think. So now you've survived the post-pandemic or pandemic post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm glad you're still liking it here. And your mom moved here.
She did.
And
she's
a volunteer. She's one of our volunteers at the hospital, which is fun.
Yes.
So we've snagged her. We're going to keep her no matter what.
She's keeping herself busy. Yeah. She's also volunteering for Nourish Those in Need. And putting meals together for the homeless camp in Seaside. She's enjoying being in this mm-hmm. community.
That's good.
That's incredible. So what do you love about Oregon and Seaside, or either one, besides that you knew there were going to be trees here when you moved here? And besides that you have family here.
Okay, well, remember, I was like 23 when I was thinking, you know, my perception of Oregon at 23.
I'm an East Coast kid. That's why I asked that question, because that's my exact same impression. That Oregon is Pacific Northwest. I lumped it together with Washington, and I knew there's some place called Seattle, and I didn't really think of anything besides Bigfoot and trees.
Perfect. So we're a big outdoorsy kind of family. So especially as the boys were growing up, spending so much of our time exploring Oregon, camping all over the state, up into Washington, up into the San Juans, down to California. So for us, Oregon is being outdoor. It's the ocean and the mountains and the lakes. And I absolutely love, Seaside. The people in Seaside are so kind. The weather is wonderful, and absolutely love all of the restaurants. And it's just a wonderful place.
So, what's some of your favorite camping spots?
Camping spots. Let's see. Cape Lookout was one of our favorites. That's outside of Oceanside. Timothy Lake was always a mainstay. That's out outside of Mount Hood, but it's really gotten very, very congested there. Waldo Lake in Central Oregon is a
gorgeous,
a must
deep
see.
Lake. Yes,
very. You know that one then?
I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Wallawas. Okay. Yeah, I can go on and on.
Excellent choices.
So anything that you think that we should know about you that we wouldn't know? What's something that's unique about this, about you?
Well, that's a tough one.
I know that is a tough one.
With less than a minute to go.
Okay, let me do an easier one. Good. What would you say to young women interested in going to healthcare administration?
Young women going to healthcare administration.
Thinking about going into it.
Find a mentor. Meet someone who's in the field. Stay connected. It's absolutely achievable. And it's a wonderful career because there are so many directions that you can take it. It is not just one linear path. You can go in so many different directions.
That's great. I think that wraps it up. That's a better question. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
I'm so glad that you are here and have decided to stay and are enjoying your time serving in Seaside.
We hope that you'll stay for about 20 years.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Or until Lana's ready to retire.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Go make some history. We will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.